The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
The Boston Red Sox unfortunately fall short with their little rally, dropping a score of 7-6 against the Houston Astros in Game 1. Ultimately, their record will fall to 65-55, 10 games above 500 in an ever-tightening wildcard race. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Jason Kelly and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? Go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Now, this was a rough one, a real heartbreaker. It's one of those games where you almost wish that the Sox just lost 7-2 and you could just say, you know what, my heart was out of it the whole time, but they gave us hope. And that's the most dangerous thing, right? And now we find ourselves with yet another one-run loss. Where do you guys want to start?
I mean, I think it's got to start with Jordan Hicks, because Crochet did not have his stuff today, obviously. Gave up five runs, you know, not his best start. But five runs is not insurmountable, as we saw, you know. And look, sometimes with this offense, it can be. But tonight they fought back. But Jordan Hicks, again, like, you, all you did at the deadline in terms of bullpen was go and got Steven Matz, who is okay, but he's nothing special. Jordan Hicks, I guess you can kind of say, is one of your trade acquisitions. He wasn't at the deadline, but he was part of the Rafael Devers return. This guy stinks. There's a reason why San Francisco was so happy to get rid of him. First of all, the contract, 2 more years at 11 per for this bum. I mean, holy crap. And this is who he is. He has, you know, a good fastball, but half the time he can't locate it. And usually when he's not locating, it ends up middle, and he gets crushed. That's what happened again tonight. So this is a glaring, you know, sort of thing about, like, you didn't get enough help at the deadline. You could have gotten more bullpen help, and you didn't. All you got was Steven Matz. You could have been more aggressive. You could have been creative and gone and get, you know, some more relief help. I'm not saying you have to do what San Diego did, where they went absolutely bananas and blew up their farm system. They also have the most lethal bullpen in baseball now, as we saw. But you didn't have to go to that level, but could you get a little bit more so that you don't have a guy like Jordan Hicks coming in to a situation like this? And I get it. At that point, it looked like mop-up duty, but it really wasn't. You were still kind of in the game, and he put you further away from it. So it's just another example of, like, you're now facing teams that were more proactive at the deadline than Craig Breslow was, and it's showing. Houston wins a game like this because they made moves in the deadline. You didn't, and that's why you lost.
Don't worry, Jason. We're going to see Dustin May, I'm sure, in the bullpen very soon, because he's probably going to get lit up in the series. I forgot what he means, tomorrow or the day after. But yeah, I would say put Jordan Hicks in mop-up duty, but you can't even trust him to do that. I think it wasn't the Houston series. I think it was the Royal series. We put him in with like a 5 or 6 run lead, and that game became ridiculously interesting when it didn't need to. At this point, you can't put Jordan Hicks in the game unless you're either down or up by 10 runs. That's the plus minus at this point. Yeah, it's disappointing to see. I mean, I have no faith in Jordan Hicks, and I wanted to. I so badly wanted him to be a part of the solution to this bullpen, and he clearly isn't at this point. There's moments and flashes where he has, you know, he gets guys out on three pitches, you're like, oh, wow, there's a flash. And the next guy, he walks him on four. So And then he's just serving meatballs for home runs. But I can't say I'm surprised with this game. You know, to your point, Nick, I would have much rather lost 7-2 because I was already in the mindset, all right, we're going to lose this game. You know, just to get to the podcast at this point. And of course, they reel you in a little bit and they come a little bit close. They have a couple of chances to tie it and they don't. And I'm like, all right, it's going to be like a MLB record one run loss that we're going for at this point. So super frustrating, but I can't say I'm shocked at this point.
Yeah, definitely. The Hicks experience is just really, really tough. You know, Garrett Crochet had, I think it's not unfair to say his first bad game really of the season. He's had a couple games where he's gotten banged up here and there, but not to this extent. Out in four innings, he was clearly tipping his pitches somehow. You know, the Astros must have had those highly illegal iPads over in the dugout that we've been hearing about. But no, you know, that's what guys look at these days. The coaching staff, they do a lot of research on you. They have all this video and they are just looking for tips. And they must have found something because that was not just a bad game. That was, oh no, I'm getting lit up. You know, they were just ready for every single fastball, it seemed. Absolutely devastating him. I was glad that we actually pulled him after I think it was 85 pitches because obviously, you know, you saw him over in the bullpen looking so, so upset. And who could blame him? But it's something that needs to be addressed. You know, they're going to go in, they're going to look at what was it that they figured out about him. When it comes to Hicks, there's nothing to figure out. There's no need to tip a pitch because, you know, just like you said, Chris and Jason, you know, the guy will throw absolute junk, you know, 100 miles per hour, nastiest pitch you've ever seen. And then bam, just a hanging meatball that gets blasted over the fence. And it's a shame because we got back into this game. We banged up the crybaby Neris. We even banged up, what's his name? Excuse me. Let me just look it up. Auchert, who's a really nice pitcher. Unfortunately, it just wasn't enough. And apparently, Josh Hader is unavailable, it looks like. Everyone speculated he would come out, and yet he didn't. So very, very interesting.
Yeah, so are we allowed to put up a stink now that, you know, like the rest of baseball has, that, you know, maybe they were using iPads and they figured out that Crochet was tipping pitches? Are we allowed to complain now? Because all I've seen all over Twitter is every other fan of all the other major league teams complaining that the Red Sox are cheaters and it's, you know, unethical and, oh, typical Boston cheating again because they're using iPads to figure out, you know, pitchers' grips. Can we start doing that now? Because that, I think you're right. Like, that's what it felt like. The Chas McCormick homer, it felt like he knew fastballs coming because a fastball up that high, you don't typically go after that and succeed. He knew it was coming. So, look, maybe there was some of that going on. It could also just be Crochet had a hiccup, right? Even an ace is going to have a hiccup where goes out there and gets lit up a little bit, right? But if they were using the iPads, they were doing that, I don't care. Again, it's part of the game. It's completely legal. Now, you can't do, like, I think it's like you can do it before the game. You can take, like, images, screenshots before the game, and you can talk to your hitters about it. But you can't actually film anything during the game and show it to your, like, that's illegal, right? And I don't think anyone was doing that. So are we allowed to complain now that, you know, hey, Houston, those dirty Houston Astros who have been cheating before, they were using iPads against Garrett Crochet, and that's how they won? Like, are we allowed to do that now, or can we be the adults in the room, unlike every other fan in baseball, and just say, yeah, they got to Crochet today. It sucked, but on to the next one.
Listen, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right? So I don't even like to get into the whole what's going on, what are people doing to try and cheat and get ahead. Like, you know what? More power to you. If you could figure out a way to get around it and you know, get wins until someone slaps you on the wrist, God bless you. I think the real reality and the concern that I have for this team is, listen, we've been on a nice run. I don't want to be down in the dumps and say this team's not going to make the playoffs. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But realistically now, after the last series, the way it went and the way this one started, is we're starting to slowly crawl back to we need to win every Crochet start. And that's just not realistic. It's not realistic for any team. At some point, you need your twos, your threes, even your four and five at some point to muster up a win when you don't expect it. And you certainly need your two and three to to be consistent and at least win every other two out of every three if you're going to be serious and really make a run at this and not get swept in the first round if you even make the playoffs. And again, not saying they're not going to, but like you said, Nick, this race is starting to tighten up where we went into this going, oh, wow, we've got the first wild card. Like, we could challenge for the division. Well, now we're not the first wild card, and the Yankees are playing the Twins, who they always clobber no matter how bad they are. And so by the end of this week, we could just as easily be in the third wild card. So I don't know where we go from here. I would love if one of these pitchers the next 2 days can just, like, at least get one of these games. But the truth is until we see pitchers like Bayo and Giolito consistently at least keep us in games against these, you know, playoff teams, whether it's the Padres, the Astros, which they've proven they can do, but consistently, not yet. Because let's face it, like, our offense, we're a team that needs to get ahead early, which we did tonight. But the thing is, the last week and a half, even 2 weeks, when we're only up those two runs, even three runs, when we have the bases loaded, one out, no outs, we have to tack on runs. Even if it's just one, sometimes that one makes a difference. We just lost two of the last three games by a run. So they've got to figure something out here, but you need something from these starting pitchers, because listen, our offense is not going to be consistent enough to carry us. They're just not. They're not built that way. So I'm looking for something out of the starting pitching. Hopefully it starts tomorrow or the day after, but it's got to turn around and turn around quick, because otherwise we could be in the outside looking in very quickly here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Mariners have been playing very excellent baseball. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They're on a 7-game win streak, and they leapfrogged us in the standings for the wild card. The Blue Jays were playing very well. I think they have another tough series against them. I think they're playing the Cubs, if I recall correctly, starting tomorrow. So that's good. But it's tough. At this point, we can't take anything for granted, and we never could. You know, I saw a few Sox fans after we swept the Houston Astros saying that there's no one that we need to be afraid of. And I heard that, and that didn't sit right with me, because I'm looking and we have a tough schedule. And some people didn't like it when I pointed that out, but it's true. The Astros are a tough team. You sweep them, you play them again so soon after, they're going to come out with a vengeance, which they clearly did tonight. The Padres are an unbelievably great bullpen. I mean, that's just a super pen for real. And, you know, we've got a lot of games versus the Yankees, versus the Marlins. We've got three more versus the Tigers and the Blue Jays. Lots of things can happen before the end of this season, and I want to make sure that we're playing our best baseball. You know, Garrett Crochet, I was curious, right? So I looked up comparing him to Tarik Skubal, and sure enough, yeah, little blips like this happen. This is only the fourth time of the year that Garrett Crochet has given up either four or five runs. Tarik Skubal has actually had five of those games this year. So pretty comparable, both great pitchers, both at the head of a Cy Young race. So little things like this are going to happen. But to your guys' point, when you have Walker Buehler and Dustin May in the rotation, and you're just coming off a Giolito meltdown and a game where Bayo just wasn't good enough, it really hurts to have Crochet meltdown to just, I mean, that's just the cherry on top. It really is. And the offense was great. I've got a lot of positive things I can say about a lot of the guys who surprised me positively tonight. You know, this late rally was not something I was expecting. They were swinging the bat very well. But then you have little decisions, whether it's Cora, you know, pinch hitting Ref Snyder. I feel a little early. I'm not sure if they should have done that. I think you sort of save Ref Snyder for Wong next inning. That was sort of what was in my head. But, you know, you had the Romy caught stealing earlier on. You had Sidan Rafaela with a terrible out on the base paths to end a potential little rally. And the little mistakes like that, they just can't happen because they're costly.
Yeah, those little mistakes are starting to rear their ugly head again, unfortunately. And when the Red Sox playing their best baseball, they weren't doing that. They were running the bases very well. They were playing good defense. And Cora was kind of on his game. He was making good decisions. He was, you know, he wasn't forcing anything. I feel like tonight, yeah, the Romy caught stealing. Like, Romy's not a base stealer. He's a good runner. He's not slow. He's not a base stealer. He's just kind of a little bit fast, right? There's a whole different side to, like, you can be fast and be a terrible base stealer. Like, we've seen that time and time again. So I hated that decision. I agree with about the Ref Snyder pinch hitting. I thought that was a little bit early on his part. I think he jumped the gun there. And again, just, you can't afford to have these little mistakes, because you're again, like, your pitching is just kind of all over the place right now. And yeah, you've got your ace on the mound, but he got his ass kicked today. And you know that your bullpen is not exactly in great shape. I mean, they're calling up guys from the minors that, like, just Giovanni Moran, who they got from Minnesota, which, by the way, I know a lot of people are excited about him. Minnesota gave him away from Mickey Gasper. I don't think Minnesota values this guy very highly. So I'm not, I'm not going to hold my breath on Giovanni Moran. Okay. Like, I know all the, you know, the Millikens of the world will tell you, oh, his whiff rate is this and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Like, they wanted Mickey Gasper instead. Okay. So yeah, not going to hold my breath on him. They're still, like, calling up guys from the minors, trying to retool it. Now we're hearing rumors of, like, we might see Peyton Tolley up, you know, before the year is out to be in the bullpen. Like, that's how desperate they are to figure out the bullpen problem. Meanwhile, Brendan Bernardino is pitching scoreless innings down in Worcester, and they don't want to call him up for some reason. But okay, sure, let's put Jordan Hicks out there 1,000 more times. So Breslow's inaction at the deadline is really costing them, because, and look, it's not just the bullpen. Look at what happened on Sunday. Dylan Cease wiped the floor with you. And San Diego, on deadline day, pretty much made it clear, like, we're willing to part with him. We've acquired enough pitching. We're not going to re-sign him after this year. Dylan Cease is available. You could have pounced on that. And honestly, it wouldn't have taken much. Yeah, you'd have to give up some prospects, but you're not going to have to give up, like, Christian Campbell. You maybe not even have to give up the password. Like, you could have given up a Franklin Arias or, you know, one of your thousands of shortstops, and they probably would have taken the deal. They just wanted to ship him out. And then he goes out there on Sunday and shoves. It's like, we had the discussion a couple of shows ago about who is the Red Sox number two behind Crochet. Is it Giolito or is it Bayo? And I think the consensus was it's Giolito, but we all feel like Bayo's turning that corner. Those two guys just had two really bad starts. You can't just say, oh, we've got the number two in-house, we're good. Like, they had to be more proactive. And, you know, looking at this series now, you've got Dustin May tomorrow and Walker Buehler to finish it out. I don't feel great about that. Nobody should feel great about that. So now you're looking down the barrel at a sweep via the Houston Astros, which, yes, the Astros are a good team, but they're a team that you should be able to compete with and should be able to take at least one game from. And, you know, I know the narrative is, I've seen some people in the chat saying, well, don't worry, like, we got Miami after that. Miami's playing good baseball. They're hot right now. And one thing that team can do, they can pitch. And this is the biggest problem for the Red Sox. If you face a team with good pitching, this lineup can get shut down quickly. So, you know, look, I still think they're a playoff team. I'm not, you know, going to be Mr. Doom and Gloom, but it's not looking great. And the next 2 days are crucial. They got to take at least one of these by hook or crook.
Man, there's so much to cover there between the points that you guys all just hit. But a couple of comments here I want to hit on. So, Randy, best pitching performance of the past week for Buehler. Let that sink in. Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I'm trying to let that sink in. I might get drunk thinking about it. Andrew the Goat, what a pathetic game by the Red Sox. Can't believe this. Well, I'd like to say I can't believe it, but I've been watching this team the whole season, so it's not shocking, unfortunately. But going back to something you said, Nick, as far as, like, the Sox, you know, no one being scared, you know, I get what you're saying, but I also do kind of agree with some of the fans that, like, when this team is firing on all cylinders, there is no team that scares me. Case in point, like, look at the Dodgers series last year at Fenway, right? And, like, we were actually playing our best baseball when they came into Fenway. And they tore the cover off the ball, swept us, and made us look like fools, like we should be in AAA. Fast forward a year, kind of playing our best baseball. We play and we take 2 out of 3. We probably could have swept that series if a couple things went a little bit different, but we took 2 or 3. There is no team in the MLB today, with the exception of maybe the Brewers right now, but it seems like every week there's a new team that looks like they're going to be this juggernaut and they fall off, including us. We've done it. There is no team where it's just this foregone conclusion, all right, they're going to be in the World Series like the Dodgers last year. We all knew it. We expected it. We got it. They roughed up the Yankees, thank God. And that's what we all expected. That team doesn't exist this season. However, the Sox are not good enough to make the mistakes that they make on a daily basis and expect to win games. They are not talented enough to overcome one or two mistakes. So that's where I agree with you, Nick, is they're not the prototypical team where it's like, we don't have anyone to be scared of, because the truth is, yeah, we could beat anyone on any given day. We have the pitching to be able to do it on any given day. We have the hitters that when they're hitting can do it. We can move the ball and get around the bases. But those mistakes in the field, behind the plate, we're not good enough to overcome it now with this roster. So that's that. Miami, the amount of runs they put up on the Yankees, I mean, that was a slugfest. I mean, they were putting 7-8 runs up, it seemed like, every game in that series. So I agree with you. Their pitching is really good, Jason, but man, they could score runs too. And they score in bunches. They'll put 6 up on you in one inning out of nowhere, which has been the Achilles heel for the Sox team, is they have that one bad inning and it completely unravels the game for them, like tonight. And so that series does scare me. And I think, you know, Alex Cora, he's starting to remind me of a football coach that like doesn't know how to coach unless he has a 2-touchdown lead. Any game that we've been close in, he is mismanaged, whether it's substituting at the wrong time, sending guys for steals when it's like, oh, do you really like, again, nothing against Romy Gonzalez. The guy's got wheels compared to most people. He's not a base stealer. Like, that's not what he's known for. I get the situation. What that tells me is Cora doesn't have confidence in the offense to string a couple of hits, move people around the bases, and get that run in. He's praying to God he's able to swipe second and that we get a single and he scores, or a bloop. And the Seidel and Rafaela, like, we're starting to see that a couple of times now from this team where they're getting caught kind of sleeping behind the wheel and they're going and they're getting like a little bit of a lead and the pitcher just like catches them asleep. And again, we are not good enough. Like, that's a moment right there where who knows, maybe that person gets a single and Seidel Rafaela comes in and that's an extra run that ends up being the extra run that could have been the tying run. So Alex Cora, he's got to make adjustments. He has to be the manager that he is when we have a 5-run lead, when we're down by a run, down by 2 runs. Because, I mean, he's definitely a rah-rah guy. Like, I don't doubt that he has some sort of impact in being able to get troops motivated. Like, they made a comeback today. It was good to see. But they still fell short. And that's something we just can't afford to do. And I don't know what adjustments this second he has to make. I have to go back and kind of watch. But it's becoming evident that in these close games, I mean, listen, there's a reason why they have, like, 20-plus 1-run losses. Right. And I'm not putting it all on Alex Cora, but a fair amount have been on him. So that's that. And then to your point, Jason, Dylan Cease, I said going into the deadline, like, and I recognize that he would have basically been a rental, but there were rumors that if he was going to get traded, depending on the team, he would be willing to sign an extension because he didn't feel like he was getting a fair shot in San Diego coming back from, I believe it was Tommy John. And that's a guy like with the flyers that we've taken on pitchers the last couple of seasons here in Boston, trade for him, sign him to an extension, team-friendly contract. He's not going to ask for the moon on a contract coming off of Tommy John because no one knows what he's going to be, and he even recognized that at this point. I would have taken a flyer. I mean, we traded Thibs for freaking Dustin May. There's no one that's going to tell me that with the assets that we had that we couldn't have put together a package that didn't include the password or Christian Campbell or Mayer, whatever you want to say, that could have got this guy in Boston. And you know what? If it comes out that we couldn't have or we tried to put something, great. But again, it just goes back to the whole deadline. Like, the moves we made are not going to put us over the top. I don't think they're going to kill us, but they're not going to move the needle either. So it's kind of ride and die with the team that we've had. And it's been a fun team, the most exciting one we've had in probably a half a decade. And, you know, it's disappointing because back to my other point, like, I don't think there's a team out there that we can't beat. And if we had just made this team a little bit better, you know, would we still be in first place? Would we have been able to take advantage of the fact that the Blue Jays dropped 2-3 to the Dodgers, right? And be a game behind them and still challenging, you know, the Astros tonight. And, you know, we'll never know. And that's frustrating.
Yeah, one thing that is without a doubt necessary is we need some first base production. And to Toro's credit, he put up, out of his 3 at-bats tonight, he had 2 really good ones. Early on in the game, I think it was the 2nd inning, he had that hard hit fly out all the way to the warning track, and it just didn't quite have the carry on it. Thought for a moment when it left the bat that it was gone. It was a great launch angle and everything, but just didn't have the oomph. But then, you know, he sort of contributed to that little rally late. Beautiful home run, 398, feet total, 74.6 bat speed, sent the home run 103.7 miles per hour, which the flyout was actually 104.4 miles per hour. So that was great to see from him, you know, because this is a guy who's been cold for about 2 months now and kind of been dead weight. Everyone has been saying, well, where's Campbell? Bring up the passport, bring up anyone, get us a first baseman. I know that we were talking about trading for one, whether it was Suarez, whether it was Naylor, whether it was O'Hearn, whether it was anyone, right? To see Toro at least do his part tonight and be a positive contributor, that was encouraging, and we kind of need that guy to go on a run. We need all these guys to go on runs because the strength of this Sox offense is also kind of its weakness in a way, where people have talked about how it's a very deep lineup, how 1 through 9, there's no true easy out. And when guys like Connor Wong aren't in the lineup or David Hamilton, I agree with that. Although Wong, to his credit, smoked a double today off the shortstop's glove. Really, really nice hit to bring up Roman Anthony, who unfortunately struck out to lose the game. But, you know, a big problem, I think, with this offense is as deep as it is, it's not particularly tall. You know, you have a giant in Alex Bregman, and everyone else has their moments, but we are really lacking that superstar oomph bat, you know, and it hurts. We saw Roman get some real power tonight. He had a beautiful home run. That one also went 398 feet, apparently. And he had a flyout that actually would have been gone in 15 parks. So we're seeing him hit the ball harder. I've got no concerns about Roman whatsoever. The guys behind him, we just need to keep on churning, pretty much. Keep on rolling forward. And unfortunately, this is kind of a club that seems like they're all hitting together or they're all striking out together. And that's just kind of what it is.
Yeah, lots of streakiness in that lineup. So you got guys like Bregman. You know he's pretty consistent. You know what he's going to do. I put Roman Anthony in that category now, too. I think you know what you're going to get out of Roman. He's going to draw a walk every now and then. He's going to get on base. Like, I think we can feel pretty safe about that. But the middle of your lineup is filled with very streaky guys. Willie Abreu, Trevor Story. Like, these are guys that when they're hot, they're unstoppable, right? Story went on that little run about a month ago where he was looking like the best shortstop in baseball. Willie Abreu at times looks like an MVP when he's on because he's just mashing home runs left and right. But there are also times where those guys go really quiet and it derails this lineup because you have Anthony and Bregman at the top, you know, trying to set things up. You got Duran, who is, it feels like him and Rafaela have swapped, where Duran is now super hot and Rafaela is kind of cooling down and, you know, making stupid base running mistakes. So you got those guys kind of trying to set the table and get the offense going. And then it inevitably comes down to two outs, runners on. Here comes Trevor Story. He strikes out on 3 pitches or he pops it up, you know, in foul ground, right? So that's the maddening part, is that, yes, this lineup does have talent. Like you said, 1 through 9, it's a good lineup. There's not really a black hole anywhere in it. You know, maybe when David Hamilton was playing, like you said, but he's down in Worcester now. So, you know, not going to see him for a while. But the problem is, like, there's only about 2 or 3 guys that are consistent. And the others, it's just they'll go 0-for-4 and, you know, strike out a bunch, and that's that. And on a night like tonight, where you fight back a little bit, you know, unfortunately, it all falls on the shoulders of Roman Anthony to, you know, try and hit a 2-run homer, you know, again, to put the Red Sox ahead, and he strikes out because he's going up against a good pitcher, and that's what happens. So the lineup is maddening. It's just there are times where they're really fun to watch and they're firing on all cylinders, and that's great. But man, when the inconsistencies show up, and especially in games like this, it really makes you go like, man, yeah, like you said, Abraham Toro, was good to see him have a good night because, you know, a lot of fans have been looking to kind of get rid of him. I frankly I wanted them to go and get a Naylor or an O'Hearn and still hang on to Toro. Like, he's still a valuable guy to keep on the bench. He's a switch hitter, can play the corners, you know, something like that. But look what Josh Naylor's done with Seattle. You could have had something like that, something just a little bit better than Abraham Toro, and just Breslow just sat on his hands. So yeah, the lineup is going to keep doing this because he didn't add to it. This is it. You're going to get some nights where they look really good. You're going to get other nights where, you know, Abreu doesn't do anything. Story doesn't do anything. Yoshida doesn't do anything. And we're sitting here going, that's another winnable game. And like we said, another one-run loss that maybe didn't have to be. And we just don't have the firepower to keep up with these other teams, not just in the American League, but all around MLB, that were proactive at the deadline and made themselves better. We're outgunned now. And that's on Breslow.
Yeah, interesting comment. So Butt Munch Cookie, he's a regular here. Why don't they give Vaughn Grissom a chance at first? I've seen that, and I've seen obviously Christian Campbell, like why isn't Christian Campbell coming up? That sentiment. Vaughn Grissom, I mean, I keep forgetting he's even on the team in any sort of capacity, part of this franchise at this point. So maybe we should give up on him. And then I obviously have my own conspiracy theory on Campbell that if they have any thoughts of possibly trading him in the offseason to get us more pitching or something, they're probably scared to bring him up because if he has another stint like he did the last time he came up to the major leagues, his trade value would be absolutely diminished, and there's no way you're getting rid of him in the offseason. And again, not saying they're going to trade him, but it's definitely it's a possibility at this point, especially since we're going to need help specifically in the starting rotation. You guys hit all the points with the lineup, so I don't want to beat a dead horse there because it is wildly inconsistent. When they're hitting, everything is great. When they are not, this is such a flawed lineup. It seems like when you're down a run, it's like, all right, well, we're going to lose. Like we're not going to be able to come back. That's why the comeback today was so shocking, but yet the result wasn't. But, you know, to go back to a point I was talking about with Dylan Cease, because now that whole thing has got me so pissed off, the fact that, like, their situation that we're in. Can we agree that more than likely, if we do make the playoffs, like the Achilles heel for this team is the fact that we don't have that bona fide two, right? Or that it's wildly inconsistent at this point. I think we would all agree based on what we say in the war room. And I think we could also agree that if Walker Buehler was even putting up stats like a Brian Bello or a Lucas Giolito at this point, we would probably be in a much better position. We may be even winning the division to this point, right? Like if I look at Lucas Giolito really quick, 3.77 ERA, 82 strikeouts, got 33 walks, he's 8-2 record. Brian Bello, 3.25 ERA, he's 8-6, but he's got 95 strikeouts, 45 walks. What if I read you these stats? 11-2 record, 3.49 ERA with 95 strikeouts, only 39 walks, and I told you we had that guy on our roster, and imagine he was still wearing the Red Sox jersey, and we had him taking the Walker Buehler starts. Where would we be with an 11-2 record and a 3.49 ERA? We might be leading the division. Does anyone want to guess who that pitcher was?
Does his name begin with a Q?
It sure does. Well, I think his name is actually Charles, but yes.
No.
But yes, it is Quinn Priester, who is now on the MLB leading Milwaukee Brewers. I don't even know what we got back for that trade, but I can assure you it is nothing of equal or significant value. That right there, I totally forgot about it. And then I was looking at C stats, and then somehow Quinn Priester came out. I'm like, huh, imagine we still had him. If we still had Quinn freaking Priester, this team might look a lot different. Our record might look a lot different. Oh. Very, very, very frustrating.
It really is, because when we traded Priester, you know, it was at the time we thought starting pitching was an area of strength. We had Cutter Crawford coming back. We had Dobbins emerging. We had Sandoval coming back in a few months. We had all these options. Hauk was still on the roster, and we assumed he would, even if he wasn't going to be, you know, what he was last year, at least a solid pitcher. And then everything kind of fell apart. The injury bugs started to spread. You have Dobbins with the season-ending injury. You have Sandoval and Crawford say, oh, actually, we're not coming back this year. Sorry. You have Hauk disappearing into the memory hole. And it's just bad. It's one of those, hindsight is 2020. But even at the time, I think a lot of people were bummed about losing Priester. Now, how everything has transpired, it is one of the most, like, egg on your face moments this front office could ask for in a season where the front office has had quite a few of those.
Yeah. And what's equally frustrating about that is the guy they got back is another outfielder. This Yoferi Rodriguez, who everyone tells me is like the second coming of Willie Mays, right? Cause that's what the Red Sox nerds do. As soon as you trade for a prospect, he's the best prospect you've ever heard of. Right. Like, I remember when we traded and we got Alex Benelis from Milwaukee, and, you know, oh my God, Alex Benelis, power hitting corner infielder. He's going to be a difference maker. Yeah, they cut him like 2 months ago because he sucks that much. Like, so they got this, you know, Ferry Rodriguez, who's very young. I think he's like 18 or 19, but he's an outfielder. We have enough outfielders. We have so many outfielders. We have nothing at the corner positions. So it's like, not only did you give up a good pitcher who, by the way, is 23 years old, so he's only going to get better. You gave up a good pitcher and you didn't get, like, you just got an outfielder back, another outfielder. Like, does Craig Breslow have a thing with outfielders the way that Haim did with shortstops? Like, he just wants to collect all the young outfielders that he possibly can, you know, even if he doesn't have room for them. It just, people were so quick to dismiss the Quinn Priester trade. Like, I heard it at the time. It's like, oh, well, you know, they couldn't really figure him out in, you know, in AAA. He was having trouble, you know, getting his pitching arsenal together. And then I'm still hearing it now. People saying, well, he's pitching well because he's in the NL Central. He gets pitched against the Pirates and, you know, bad teams like that. If he was pitching here, he'd be getting lit up. It's like, you don't know that. You're just trying to excuse away a bad trade because you want to defend Craig Breslow for some stupid reason. They could really use Quinn Priester right now. But like you said, you pointed out the guys that they leaned on. Like, they thought they were going to figure out Tanner Houck. Nope, he's gone. Gone for a while now, too. They thought Patrick Sandoval was going to come back because that always works, right? The guy who, oh, yeah, no, he's hurt now, but he's making good progress. That's what we heard in April and May. Like, oh, yeah, Sandoval's actually really on track. And then, what was it, a couple weeks ago? Yeah, it's actually not going so well. The recovery's going a little bit slower. Not sure we'll see him this year. Shocker. So it's just, it's the same stupid crap. Like, they keep trying to just lean on their retreads and their reclamation projects, and it's never going to work that way. Just go get the Dylan Cease guy. Go get the guy who's proven. Like, Dylan Cease, the last couple of years, his starts, like, in terms of games started, 24 this year, last year, 33. 2023, 33. 2022, 32. 2021, 32. The guy posts. He's healthy, he starts, and his K rate is always high. And you could have had him. You just had to give up some prospects, and you didn't want to do it. So now you got to lean on Dustin May and Walker Buehler. Good luck with that.
Well, you know, the other thing is that everyone that you guys just mentioned, but we forget too, at that time when we traded him, I think the front office was also rolling the dice and putting a lot of chips in the basket of Fitz and Dobbins. And at that point, you know, we'd seen enough from Fitz last year to go, okay, seems like we might have something. And then Dobbins came and it seemed like, oh, wow, lightning in a bottle. Again, it's like a Fitz 2.0 with even more upside. Obviously, the unfortunate part is that Dobbins got hurt, which no one could obviously foresee that that was going to happen, because it might be a completely different story if he hadn't, the way he was pitching. However, you also have to wonder, for all the reasons you guys just mentioned, the players, the Houck, all these different guys that we had from other teams, these reclamation projects, plus at the time, Quinn Priester, Dobbins, and Fitz, it was very similar to our outfield situation, where it's like we had this plethora of talent at many different levels where it's like, huh, you know, he looked at it and said, let's get rid of Quinn Priester, who was probably somewhere towards the top in that bridge between AAA and the major league level. And you almost have to wonder, because that backfired so badly, did he get scared to pull the trigger on one of the outfielders because of how badly that blew up in our face? Where now it's like, let's hold on to all these assets because we can't afford to get rid of one, because what happens if this blows up in our face? If one of these outfielders gets hurt, then I just traded one. What are we going to do? And I'm not saying that's a reason not to make a move, but you almost have to wonder if that's in the back of their mind after this Quinn Priester. Because, I mean, the egg on our face with that is just unbelievable at this point. So I don't know what the answer is long term. What I can say is that you clearly see, based on the way our last draft went, with all the pitchers that we took immediately when we were on the clock, that they were basically, that was their way of saying, all right, we screwed that up. We need to replenish the cupboard on the pitching because, you know, now Dobbins is hurt. We got rid of Quinn Priester. We really don't have much there that's going to be coming up to the major league level anytime soon that's going to wow anyone. So outside of Toley. So I don't know what the answer is going to be long term, but it's a lot of puzzling and questionable moves, to say the least.
Yeah, and, you know, what I will say is that this winter, we have a chance to plug a lot of these holes. It's very possible that the 2026 Red Sox could be, and by all metrics, you could say should be, juggernauts. I mean, genuinely. If you go out and you add a guy like Valdez or Suarez or even King or Cease to this rotation, it's nasty. If you let all of these guys who have gotten injured this year get healthy again, the rotation and the pitching staff should be nasty. Kudos to Whitlock, who tonight was wonderful, by the way. We didn't mention him, but he had a really great two innings of relief and is having a really good season overall. Obviously, if Chapman does leave, we'll see. I mean, Hicks is going to be a project. I was hoping early on in the season, I think everyone was, that, oh, well, maybe this is our closer next year. Well, he's got to figure out a lot about his mechanics, about his control, about his delivery, whatever it is. All those pitching gurus got to go to work this offseason and say, what are you doing wrong and how can you do it right? But, you know, it is very possible that next year, if Christian Campbell takes the step forward, you have a healthy Casas that you could either use or trade. You trade an outfielder, so on and so forth. There's a lot of ways that this 2026 team could be a juggernaut. But what I'm concerned about right now is, of course, the 2025 team, because I don't think it's unreasonable to say that this team has a chance at the World Series. It's really anyone's league. As of right now, all of our complaining, and there's a lot to complain about, a lot of valid stuff to complain about, which some people don't like to hear. But there's a lot of good to be had, too. Ultimately, we have the fifth most wins in the American League. I believe we would have the sixth most wins as of right now in the National League. We are firmly in a playoff race in a league that is devoid of juggernauts, as we've been saying time and time again. We don't have that true elite 100-win team that seems to be a shoo-in for the World Series. But it is a shame that we are relying on guys to step up, guys like Walker Buehler, guys like Dustin May, even guys like Giolito and Bayo. And, you know, I don't even want to say something like this, but injuries happen. God forbid if something does happen to one of our starting pitchers. I guess Cooper Criswell comes up. He should probably be here already, to be completely honest with you. But, you know, it's very fitting, too. We're staring down the barrel, let's be honest, of a sweep against the Astros. We're going to need a fight against that. We're going to need guys to step up, those exact ones I just mentioned. And we need to make this road trip not be a 1-in-5 disaster before we go back to Fenway. But the turbulent plane ride celebration is really kind of fitting to this team because we're 26-32 on the road. And what's very frustrating about that is we actually have a positive run differential on the road. And yet we are still six games, you know, below 500. At home, we've been a force of nature, 39 wins, 22 losses. But at the end of the day, you go into the playoffs, especially if you don't have home field advantage, where are you going to be? On the road. You got to win there. And the number of one-run games we lose, extra innings we lose, road games we lose, it just feels like a few too many weaknesses that the guys need to play excellent baseball to overcome.
Yeah, absolutely. They're not a good road team, and that's a problem. That's why you need to really push for the division. It's going to be tough because Toronto's just going to keep playing better and better baseball. But at least try to hang on to that first wild card spot because you'll have home field advantage in that wild card series. So, and you want that for that short three games. So I don't disagree. I could see them going on a run. Like, I think they are one of those teams. It's like, just get in. Just get in, get past that wild card series, and then let's see, right? You're going to have Crochet pitching a lot in the playoffs. Hopefully, you know, Bayo and Giolito can kind of, you know, steady themselves by then. You'll have a good, solid three guys, you know, pitching for you. And then, you know, we'll see about the bullpen. But, yeah, they got to strive for a little bit more consistency, and I think they can get there, but it's going to be tough because, again, it's just you're going up against some tougher teams here. And again, as I said earlier, like you're going up against teams that reloaded at the trade deadline. You didn't. So you're going to be facing teams that maybe 2 months ago you could have beaten, but now it's going to be a lot harder. And, you know, it's going to be that much bigger of an ask. So every game is crucial. And, you know, don't get swept in this one. Try to steal either tomorrow or Wednesday. You know, maybe Dustin May, you know, figures something out and holds it down tomorrow. I don't know. I mean, the pitching matchup should be in your favor because you're going up against Arrigetti, who has sucked so far this year for Houston. Now, he's a young guy, you know, kind of a development pitcher for them, but he's had a rough go of it. He's got an ERA in the sevens. So it's kind of like you're bad against their bad, right? So which offense is going to win out? Red Sox typically can do a good job of ambushing a guy like that. So if they can, that gives them a good shot. Maybe you steal tomorrow, see what happens Wednesday. But yeah, they got to at least try to hang on to that first wild card spot, get home field advantage for that wild card series because they're going to need it.
Yeah, I thought it was important to come out of the Padres series at least still in the first wild card and still nipping at the heels of the Blue Jays because I expected them to lose the series to the Dodgers, which they did. Somehow we lost ground coming out of that series against the Padres, and it is what it is, so I'm not going to cry over spilt milk, but I think what's important is that take one from the Astros in this series, take two or three from the Marlins, have it out of your last four series, be at 500, and if you could say in a 12-game span, the worst you did was 500, you could survive that if you go back out there and you know, you're 600-700 baseball in the next four series, right? So that's that point, but, you know, I think for the playoffs, you know, God willing that, you know, Crochet doesn't get injured. Because obviously if someone like him gets injured, it doesn't matter. Like, I'd rather just don't even make the playoffs because that'll be a one-and-done situation. But you get someone out of the National League like Arizona a couple of years ago that just happens to go on a run and makes it to the World Series and you're in the World Series. You know, we could go six games, maybe even seven games. Do I think we'll win? Probably not. But, like, that's at least a series. You play anyone else in the National League, you're probably done in five, six, best case scenario. However, with the American League, again, and I'm not trying to pound our chest here, there is no one that scares me and goes, we can't beat this team. I believe we could 100% lose to any team in the American League. Like, that wouldn't shock me. But there's no one in the American League that stands in front of us that I go, man, there's just no way we can get past them. Every American League team is flawed, with the exception of maybe the Mariners. If everything comes together, there's no injuries, and they really just mesh and gel, and they're playing their best baseball towards the end, that's a team where I could say, all right, you know what, maybe you don't want to run into that. But everyone else, like Toronto, I mean, we could beat Toronto. We could also get our ass kicked by Toronto. But there's really no one else that I say, okay, we've got no shot. So try, you got to play your best baseball. In your worst spots, play 500. But let's try and go 600-700 for the rest of the way here. Put our best foot forward, and, you know, you never know.
Yeah, you know, you expect – what do you guys think to get into the wild card this year? Where would you draw the line? 87, 88 wins, somewhere around there maybe, just based off of how everyone's playing?
Mid-80s should get you in there. Yeah, especially in the American League.
Wild card? Like in general or the first wild card?
No, just into the wild card.
Yeah, I would say mid. I think the way teams are starting to pick it up the last week, I would say to get the first wild card, you probably have to be closer to 90.
Oh, definitely. I would agree with that. But yeah, I think you're right that there are very good teams around here. Blue Jays, Tigers, Astros, all good. Mariners, all good. We're good. We are good. You know, I know it's a frustrating watch a lot of the time, but we are good. And hopefully we can land soft against the Marlins. I didn't realize they actually had a 5-game series, interestingly enough, versus Atlanta. They were probably making up maybe a rainout from earlier in the year. And they did drop four out of those five. So that is good. Hopefully we can have a soft landing then. But still, it's going to be a tough month. And you just need guys to show up, you know. Crochet, I've got no real worries about. We'll see how he adjusts. Dustin May, this is going to be a big thing because a lot of people said, oh, we'll give him one start for us before we start complaining. I wasn't that generous. I was, I had seen him start enough all year long. And so I was more than ready to start complaining. But with Dustin May, it's kind of interesting because you sort of see a flash of what the Red Sox see in him. You're like, okay, that sweeper moves. That's unbelievable. Okay, the four-seamer has some nice, you know, a nice sort of snap to it. And they think that maybe his cutter can be a big pitch for him. I'm not sure. I think they said it was either that or his other one. But hopefully, like you said, Spencer Arrighetti, this is his fourth start of the year, I believe. Coming off a decent season last year, good K percentage, but not a ton to look at. If May is going to have a good start and the Red Sox are going to give him some run support, I can see tomorrow happening. So we'll do probable pitching matchups right now. We have an 8:10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time start, Dustin May versus Spencer Arrighetti. And then we have a 7:10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time start on Wednesday, Walker Buehler versus the notorious Hunter Brown. How are you guys feeling about these two games, and where do you see us finishing this series?
I don't feel good at all. Like I said, I'm hoping they steal one tomorrow, right? Jump on this Spencer Arrighetti. He's been rough his last couple of starts, 5 earned his last, back-to-back his last two. So jump on that guy early, give Dustin May a little bit of breathing room. Maybe that settles him down. Maybe he's able to, at least give you 5, hopefully 6 quality innings, turn over the bullpen, nail things down. So I think tomorrow is winnable. Wednesday, I don't feel good about. Hunter Brown is nasty. And I just don't trust Walker Buehler at all. At this point, it just feels like he has nothing left. So I think the Astros will jump on him on Wednesday. So try and take tomorrow, and then we'll see what happens Wednesday. But I think they can at least steal one here.
I mean, I have a feeling we're getting swept. But out of the two, it's easy to say try and go for tomorrow because of the situation. I just have zero faith in Dustin May. I also feel like that if this team is going to do anything long-term, I don't think Dustin May is going to be a deciding factor in moving that needle. What I would say is that if we expect anything good going into October, if we're there, Walker Buehler's got to show up at some point. Like I think it was Randy said, he's been our best pitcher in the last week and a half, right? So if he could give us anything, and I'm not saying he will, but if he can, and he's able to kind of go toe-to-toe against the Astros, that would be an encouraging sign. Even if we don't win, maybe he pitches well and we still lose that game. I think long-term, that would be much more meaningful for us going forward.
Definitely. I like what Brad Sandler just said in chat. Feels like a sweep, but I didn't expect tonight's comeback. They're fighting. I think that's a very good way to put it. 7-2 was my expectation for tonight. As soon as, the runs start getting pouring on, I was like, this team, they're just going to roll over and die. And they did. They had a very good showing. It's possible Hader might be a little sore. That's a very interesting thing to keep an eye on. He might be unavailable. Obviously I'm wishing the guy nothing but the best, but if he wouldn't mind sitting out 2 more games against us, I would be very appreciative. Hunter Brown is, quite frankly, one of the best pitchers in the league. I don't think enough people are talking about him because you do have Scooble and Crochet, but I think without those guys, Hunter Brown has been just a demon this year. He's been a crazy pitcher to watch. We just saw that 10 days ago. Maybe the guys can figure something out about him. I don't know. Maybe Buehler can build off of his last start. I'm going to be optimistic, and I'm going to say, let's bang up Arrighetti tomorrow. Let's just avoid the sweep. Let's take a 2-4 skid on the road, and we can totally survive that. But you've got to learn from it. Get the iPads out in the dugout, boys, because you got to get to work. And we'll see. We'll see if guys like Campbell or Meyer become a factor later in the year, Tole, but we've got to get there first. Hopefully the Marlins, being back in Fenway, maybe that can be the start of something, but we need to go on another run here and settle down. Any other closing thoughts you guys would like to add?
At the very least, if you feel bad about how the Red Sox played tonight, the Yankees are in a free fall right now. So you can at least take some solace in the fact that they absolutely stink at the moment.
Yeah, I don't have much else to say. Go Sox.
Absolutely. Go Sox. Hopefully things turn around for us. We'll see. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It's been a good little vent session. When we were having our technical difficulties at the beginning, I had someone at me and was like, Nick, you got to get a podcast going. I need to, to hear event session. And that's what we do here. So a lot of good, a lot of bad, a lot of ugly for sure. hopefully tomorrow will be a step in the right direction. Thank you guys for hanging with us, listening in. We do appreciate it. Let's go Red Sox.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply, in-app only.